This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
Anarchism for the global city. Radical environmentalism for the concrete jungle. Esoteric explorations of the secret history of rebel culture. The Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. Every Tuesday at midnight after the news, only on listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. Be there.
Let's go. नहीं चल रहा फिरता था मेरा बाहर जी क्या से क्या हो गया चार दिन की जिंदगानी हर पर एक नई कहानी क्या था मैं क्या बन गया क्या हुआ जुलाई छुट्टी जीवन की दारी छुट्टी अब है तो मुझको ना जगा जिंदगी एक पल में ताली यूं पर बिजली हमारी झूठ है तो मुझको ना बता
Bash.
Oh, calm down. Okay, calm down. Oh, it just kind of goes on and on and on like that. You're in the mix with DJ Sabash, as you might have heard. Whoever it is saying that, I want to meet her. Oh, I want to meet her so badly. Sight unseen. This is the last of the music, which I picked up at the Diwali Mela on 74th Street in Jackson Heights. I've been playing it for 3 weeks now. This is the very last of it that I'm going to be playing. So this is from Trance of India, Volume 2 by DJ Sabash. And it just kind of goes on and on and on like that. Parts of it are more interesting than others. There's that's from old style and new style. It's kind of, that was all old style. I can't tell the difference between old style and new style. So, I'm sorry, that was new style. Maybe we'll hear some of the old style next. And see if maybe you people out there can tell the difference, because I can't tell the difference. It all kind of sounds the same to me. Anyway, it's got its highlights. It's got its points that I like. And a lot of it just kind of sounds the same to me, but I figured I'd give it a spin. It's certainly music that makes you want to move. That's for sure. Can't really, sit down and relax and mellow out while you're listening to it. It kind of makes you want to jump up and down. I hope, you all got a little charge out of it. We'll hear a little bit more from Trance of India by DJ Sabash later on in the show. The show being, by the way, the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade with me, Bill Weinberg, on listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM. And, I'm really pleasantly surprised that I don't have to pitch tonight. I thought I was going to have to pitch tonight for a third week running, and it really gave me a lot of angst. So I feel like a weight has been lifted from my shoulders. And I must say that I was, reasonably successful the last two nights, the last 2 weeks, but I was on the air and had to pitch. So I want to give a big round of applause to everybody who pulled my metaphorical rear end out of the metaphorical fire by making a pledge to this radio show, raised in the vicinity of $775 both nights for the last 2 weeks. So here is that round of applause. Yeah! Thank you. Everybody who came through for the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade and came through for WBAI, really, really appreciate it. Thank you. And I prevail upon you, of course, to pay your pledge. Very important. More important, in fact, than making the pledge is paying the pledge. All right. Now, those of you who pledged with a credit card, not an issue. We've already got your money, and there's nothing you can do about it. But those of you who are actually going to be receiving a reminder in the mail, as soon as you get that, please do, take out that checkbook and put it in the envelope and send it off to WBAI, because we really, really do need your money if we are going to stay on the air to fight another day. Of course, you all know that, I believe philosophically in being honest with the listeners about all the problems which we face here at WBAI, particularly when we're asking for your money. It's doubly incumbent upon us to be honest with the listeners about the problems here when we're asking for your money. So, I was honest about the fact that, now they can't avoid it anymore. So you've heard the official announcements and so on that, the elections are kind of in a shambles, and the voter forms have not been, what's the word for the voter forms, where you get to actually vote, have not been sent out with any degree of reliability. Apparently the powers that be are taking measures to deal with this, and the deadline for being able to vote has been pushed back to, I believe, the end of November. that's going on. And hopefully, you know, this is going to be this problem is going to be addressed in a responsible manner. There's also the problem of premiums not going out. Apparently, I am told also that we are, you know, the people in the premiums department are, you know, really, really, really applying themselves to the task of digging us out of this hole and sending out the premiums. So those of you who have pledged and haven't received your premiums, well, hang on. Your premiums should be on their way to you very, very soon through the U.S. mail. And if a few more, you know, weeks go by and you still haven't received them, well, you know, contact me here at the station and I will pass on the word, which is all I can do, to the premiums department and let them know, okay, that there's still these outstanding premiums. So I'm doing my part to take some responsibility for the situation here. And then there's, you know, as you heard me rant for the past 2 weeks, you know, I'm sort of a dissident from the whole premium-centric approach to fundraising on BAI these days, on two grounds. The first is that it represents, I argue, the creeping commercialization of ostensibly non-commercial radio. And it is indicative of BAI and the Pacifica Network straying from their founding mission and straying from the philosophy and the theory of listener-sponsored radio, as expounded by the founder of the network, Lewis Hill, 50 years ago now. And that's the first sense in which I'm a dissident from the premium-centric approach to fundraising. The other is that, you know, a lot of the premiums which are being offered, I, you know, submit are jive, snake oil, horse feathers, poppycock, however you want to call it. And, you know, quite frankly, I'm really, really glad that this fund drive is now coming to an end this week because it's been really, really painful to listen to. Because, you know, around the clock on BAI, I've been hearing nothing but health programming. And like I say, you know, I don't really, you know, I don't have an informed opinion about oregano oil. So I'm not here to, you know, judge. Maybe oregano oil really is this miracle cure. And certainly, you know, I believe in, you know, eating good. And I've been a vegetarian since I was 15. Not a vegan, but a vegetarian, broadly defined, since I was 15. And, you know, so I'm somewhat open to health programming, but it seems that there's been an awful lot of it. And maybe not all of the stuff which we've been pitching over the airwaves is necessarily checks out, you know? So, I'm worried about, you know, BAI kind of going soft and fluffy and new age and losing its edge, but I'm much, 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 much more worried about all of the right-wing conspiranoia jive that I've been hearing over these airwaves. And, you know, I already ranted about all of the, I mean, you've heard me rant again and again and again about all of the 9/11 wackery, which does not check out. And, you know, there's no point in arguing with these people about it, all of the, you know, true believers in the conspiracy with a capital T and a capital C, the conspiracy. There's no point in arguing because, you know, you shoot down any one of their assertions and without even conceding that you've got a point and that you've just refuted their jive, they just, you know, say, oh, that's just one point that you're leaping on. What about this? And what about that? And what about, and they throw, you know, all a bunch of other nonsense at you, and then, you know, you could just shoot them all down one after another, one by one by one by one by one, you know, like King Kong swatting down airplanes from the top of the Empire State Building, and, you know, there'll always be another one coming at you. So, and they'll never acknowledge defeat. They'll never say, well, you know, you have a point, but what about this? Instead, it's just, oh, you're just singling out one thing. What about this? What about this? What about this? And goes on forever. And it's a sucker's game, which is why arguing with the conspiranoids is it's a sucker's game. And, you know, I'm finished arguing with them. I hope I'm finished arguing with them. I hope I'm not so much of a sucker as to continue arguing with them, because they do not respect the truth and they do not argue honestly. So, you know, one thing which I heard over BAI, which was even more embarrassing. Now, you know, forgive me if you're one of the producers who was promoting this and you're listening tonight. Well, you know, you can take it up with me personally. Fine. I'm willing to have it out. But, I mean, even worse than the 9/11 conspiranoia, and even worse than, you know, all of the right-wing FEMA conspiranoia about how the evil black Stalin Obama is going to put, you know, Glenn Beck and his friends in concentration camps. Even worse than all of that is, you know, this one that I heard about how, you know, laws which require any kind of government oversight of anything. Birth certificates, driver's licenses, gun licenses, zoning laws, building licenses, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, is all illegal fiction, and it's all based on military admiralty law. And, you know, my reaction to that is, first of all, prove it. Okay, the mere fact that you're saying it doesn't make it so. Okay, find any legitimate legal scholar out there who goes along with that, you know, and I will, you know, eat my words, because I'm quite confident that you can't, okay? So that's my first response, is prove it. You can't, there's nothing, you know, you can say to back that up. It's merely an empty assertion, and it's wackiness. And the second and more important point is that it's a particular kind of wackiness, because I've been following, you know, the right-wing milieu, the ultra-right milieu, the radical-right milieu for a long, long time, and I know how to read through their coded language. And when they talk about admiralty law, what they're talking about is it goes back to Reconstruction, and it goes back to, you know, the South being occupied by the Union Army and giving black people their rights. That's really what it all goes back to. When they talk about admiralty law, what they're still talking about in barely coded language is Reconstruction. And, you know, saying that, you know, nothing which the government has done has been legitimate since 1865. That's basically what they're saying. And, you know, I'm an anarchist, and I'm not, you know, I'm not a dogmatic anarchist. And I'm not a frothing-at-the-mouth anarchist, and I don't think that there's going to be some glorious, bloody revolution which is going to usher in utopia anytime in my lifetime, certainly. But, you know, I do think that we should have a critique of capitalism, and we should understand that the state is a creature of capitalism, and we should have a critique of the state as a creature of capitalism. At the same time, we should acknowledge that there is such a thing as what E.P. Thompson called moral economy, which is that, you know, when the moral economy is in favor of, you know, us masses down at the bottom of the social pyramid, then we are able to flex enough political muscle to be able to wrest a better deal from the system, from the state, and from capitalism. And, you know, like rent control laws are a really, really good example of that. And rent control laws are obviously, you know, under attack. And, you know, they're going to continue to be under attack much, much more relentlessly in the 4 years to come due to the electoral results tonight. Certainly, if Thompson had won, the rent control laws would still be under attack, but perhaps a tad less aggressively than they will be under Bloomberg. I think rent control laws, as long as we're living under capitalism, rent control laws are a damn good idea. And they need to be fought for and defended. And the same is true of environmental regulations and zoning laws and building regulations and so on. And all of this talk about how, all of these laws are legal fictions which are being imposed under admiralty law illegally under some kind of, military regime, which is, nonsense, does not stand up. It all goes back to Reconstruction and it's got thoroughly racist roots. And B, it's, a cover for capital, for the most aggressive, bellicose, and reactionary sector of big money in this country, which would like to see, rent control laws and environmental regulations and building codes and all that sort of thing overturned. I can't believe that this is the propaganda that I'm hearing on BAI. It's really, really depressing. Well, here I am ranting about it a third week in a row. See, I thought I was going to have to pitch tonight, and I just found out that I didn't have to pitch tonight, so I'm doing the same thing that I would have been doing if I'd been pitching. But, I did promise that I was going to take phone calls, and I may just take phone calls on this issue tonight. But there's some other stuff which I want to get through first. In addition to hearing more of Trance of India from DJ Sabash and reading an announcement, there is a little bit of a broadcast which I referenced on the air last week, which I would actually like to play a little bit of from our sibling station in Berkeley, California, KPFA, from October 20th, a show called Against the Grain. And the title of the show, the title of that episode was After the Pacifica Crisis, featuring, here, I'll read you the blurb. In 1999, the Pacifica Radio Network was rocked by massive crisis leading to the shutdown of KPFA and thousands of people marching the streets of Berkeley to demand their station back, which, as we know, just a year after that, in 2000, right? Was it the Christmas coup of 2000? Yeah, that's right. We saw a replay of the whole thing here at WBAI in New York. In the wake of this crisis, a new governance system was put in place. 10 years later, historian Matthew Lazar and KPFA's Eileen Alfandari take stock. And listeners will be aware that Matthew Lazar is the author of the excellent book, Pacifica Radio, The Rise of an Alternative Network. And I understand that he has a sequel out now, which I need to get my hands on and read, entitled Uneasy Listening, The Civil War at Pacifica. Very good title. I'd like to play some salient parts of that broadcast. Because, as I mentioned on the air, this is going to be the part which I'm going to play. I'm going to play maybe 15 or 20 minutes of it, and then maybe we'll take listener phone calls if we have time. What they're arguing for, as much as I respect Matthew Lazar, which is a great deal because he wrote a really, really good book that I learned a lot from, what he's arguing I don't agree with. He's basically arguing that the democratic experiment at Pacifica failed and needs to be reconsidered. And this is disconcerting. This is very, very disconcerting. However, he makes a good case. Ultimately, I disagree with him, but he makes a disturbingly good case. Okay? And one of the things which he marshals in defense of this position is the dysfunctional situation here at WBAI in New York, and in particular the ugliness and chaos which goes on at our board meetings. And also he actually plays a little bit of a YouTube clip of some ugliness which went on at the Pacifica National Board meeting, which took place here in New York where it turned into a shouting match between the two BAI factions. So we're going to play a little bit of that. And by the way, I will point out, no, I'm not winning any friends by saying this, but people who are who have been closely following the situation here at WBAI to the point where they can recognize the heckling, which to the uninitiated will come across as mere, you know, amorphous cacophony. But, you know, if you're initiated and you've been following the situation here at BAI and you know the names and voices of some of the people involved, you will recognize that some of the, that the heckling is coming from both sides. Sorry. Just is. Because, I mean, I am, for better or worse, sophisticated enough about this little teapot tempest here at WBAI to be able to recognize some of the voices involved and to be able to, you know, decipher the taunts and slogans from what, again, to the uninitiated would come across as mere amorphous cacophony. And I can tell you quite with 100% certainty that in this clip, which they are, this YouTube clip, which Matthew Lazar, presents to the audience on KPFA, in defense of his position that democracy has gone wrong, particularly here at BAI, both sides takes two to tango and both sides are doing it. So, sorry, I know I'm not winning any friends by saying that, but I don't care. Telling the truth is more important to me than having friends. So it's now 12:34 in the morning on listener-supported, non-commercial, deeply dysfunctional WBAI, 99.5 FM in New York City. I have one announcement to read, and then maybe we'll go to a little bit of Against the Grain, a KPFA broadcast from October 20th with, once again, with Matthew Lazar and Eileen Alfandari. Meanwhile, I do have one announcement to read. Tomorrow is going to be the new space event. That's not the new school, but the new space. The new, what does the new space stand for again? The something, oh my goodness, I'm spacing out on what the new space stands for. How deeply embarrassing. Oh yes, of course, it's the new school for pluralistic anti-capitalist education, the new space. And their event is going to be tomorrow, November 4th, Wednesday, November 4th, 7 p.m., Swedish socialism, and they put socialism in quotes. Not what it used to be, but then again, it never was. A talk by Daniel Ankarlu, if I am pronouncing his name correctly. And they read, in light of the crisis of neoliberalism that the financial crisis, quote-unquote, has made apparent, but also the impasse of the left, political analysts and activists increasingly turn to Sweden as a socialist example, once again with socialist in quotes. However, the socialist, quote-unquote, character of Swedish society is a severely limited one. For the last 20 years or more, Swedish society has been moving steadily in the opposite direction of socialism in a wave of privatization, retrenchment of social services and social security, flexibilization of labor market relations, and increasing inequalities. Furthermore, Swedish socialism, the social policy road to socialism, quote-unquote, was a class collaborationist attempt to achieve socialism within capitalism, quote-unquote, a project that from the outset was bound to fail because of its inner contradictions. From this perspective, the speaker deduces some political implications for the Swedish labor movement and the international left in general. And the speaker is Daniel Ankarlu, who holds a doctorate in economic history and is a senior lecturer of social policy and social work at Malmo University in Sweden. He is a frequent contributor to the theoretical and political debate within the Swedish labor movement and the left. He has published widely in Swedish journals on topics of economics and politics, recently with specific forums on the prospects and limitations of the Swedish welfare model. He's published two books in Swedish on the topic, one entitled Crisis in the Welfare issue, and the other entitled Market Myths, A Critical Look at Neoliberal Assertions. Karlu is currently working on a book on the Swedish welfare model in English. And this is co-sponsored by the Marxist Humanist Initiative. So if you want to check this out, once again, it's happening tomorrow, November 4th, 7 p.m. Swedish Socialism, Not What It Used to Be, But Then Again It Never Was, a talk by David Ankarlu at TRS Incorporated Professional Suites. That's 44 East 32nd Street, 11th floor. 44 East 32nd Street, 11th floor. That's between Park and Lex. And if you want more information, you can call 888-579-2245. That's once again, 888-579-2245. Well, I know what you're all thinking. You know how dry and how esoteric and how theoretical. Well, you know, maybe it all is, but I would rather hear some actual, heaven forbid, some actual socialist analysis instead of, you know, snake oil about how, you know, housing codes are in an illegal imposition of admiralty law. I can't believe I'm hearing this jive over WBAI. Really depressing. Well, on the subject of WBAI being really depressing, why don't we hear a little bit of this broadcast from the October 20th edition of Against the Grain on KPFA Berkeley. The name of the episode was After the Pacifica Crisis, featuring historian Matthew Lazar and KPFA's Eileen Alfandari, if I'm pronouncing her name correctly. And if I can get the equipment to roll over and say uncle here.
I just want to, there's a YouTube moment which somebody showed me a little bit earlier this summer, and I'd like to play just a brief clip of this. It's a little bit of the audio of a disruption at the July Pacifica National Board meeting in New York. And again, it's one of those things where if you really want to get the full impact, there's a 3-minute clip up on YouTube. So let's take a listen to that. If you want to see a longer clip of that train wreck, you can Google it on YouTube. Now, I have personally heard from listeners who were confused about the election, about what's what, who's who. The vast majority of listeners actually do not participate in this Democratic experiment. I think the turnout's been something like 15% in past elections. I don't know what it will be this time. Some I have heard from this time said they weren't going to vote out of protest because they just didn't like what they were hearing on the air with attacks by one slate on another over the air. Many in confusion, they really, everybody says the right stuff, you know, what's the subtext, who's really going to do what. And honestly, most people have busy lives to lead, and they can't or don't want to take the time to sort it all out, which means that you end up having a board in the name of democracy elected with very little democratic participation. So I don't know what would be a better method. I don't have the blueprint, but I really think it's time to take a look after a few election cycles, what this has wrought, and my argument is it's not working.
Do you have any sense of how many people participate on average in elections here at KPFA?
There are a couple of issues here for me. I think it's true that relatively few listener subscribers vote in these elections. I do think that it's a lot more participation than happens in a lot of public radio stations in the United States. And I remain loyal to the idea that there needs to be some mechanism by which listener subscribers do have a formal say in this organization, which they pay for. However, there are a bunch of ways in which these elections are run, and the expectations for these elections among the listener subscriber community that really concern me. First of all, I just want to say something about the transition from the old regime to the democracy. One of the things that disappointed me tremendously was that from 1999 until 2001, the left, the mainstream left, the big intellectuals and writers and journalists in the left, were an enormous cheering squad for the for the democratization of Pacifica Radio. I'll name names: Noam Chomsky, Howard Zinn, Ed Herman, Robert McChesney, Alexander Coburn, Juan Gonzalez, just to name a few. Just to name a few of them. When the smoke cleared, they all disappeared, figuratively and literally. Not one of them, not one of them was willing to say or had the presence of mind to say, and it needed to be said repeatedly, that this was a very, very ambitious experiment that was taking place, and that it would require a lot of money and talent and commitment from the left. And everybody, the left just sort of disappeared. I mean, all those 10,000 people and all that energy and all that enormous energy that took place in civil society between 1999 and 2001, it just disappeared. And an enormous vacuum was created at Pacifica Radio at the time that the democratization of the organization took place. And into that vacuum came a whole lot of people with what I would experience as pretty marginal perspectives on 9/11. HIV doesn't cause AIDS. Just to name a few of the many, many very strongly held positions that that emerged, and they really sucked up an enormous have already sucked up an enormous amount of energy at Pacifica Radio. One of the problems with these elections is that the expectation of board members and of the people who support them is that being a board member means you program Pacifica Radio. The idea of board members as people who help raise money, do capital campaigning, do development, do strategic planning, do all those things that, last time I checked, board members are supposed to do. That went out the window. I attended many board meetings in 2007, 2006, 2005, and some in 2008. I cannot remember a Pacifica board meeting or a local station board meeting at which board members did not repeatedly express their opinions about what programs should be on Pacifica Radio.
Well, Matthew, tell us why you think it's important that board members not be involved in programming. Because certainly people who are running for the boards, when you hear candidate carts, people are saying, I'm running and I believe there should be more of such and such type of programming.
Well, here's an example. I mean, just the most obvious example. Near where I live, there is a newspaper called the SF Bayview. It's a local community newspaper. And its staff determined that they wanted to endorse some people for this latest election. And they explained why they were endorsing these particular individuals. And I quote, "All the candidates we endorse have agreed to do whatever they can to support Cynthia McKinney as the next executive director of the Pacifica Radio Network, a nationwide network founded at KPFA, and a black public affairs show on KPFA in a regular, desirable time slot produced by a collective headed by the SF Bayview." So in other words, we have an endorsement here in which the endorsers are saying, we're endorsing these candidates because we think that they can get us airtime. On the most immediate level, what this perspective is going to do is it's going to turn the local station boards into bazaars, essentially, for the trading of airtime. I'm very concerned that that's going to happen, and the possibility of these boards really being for anything else, especially helping the stations, will go down the drain. That's the most immediate problem. The other problem is that this really sort of compromises the journalistic independence of programmers at Pacifica Radio. You have, if we heard that the board of Dow Jones, which publishes the Wall Street Journal, that board members were regularly denouncing reporters at the Wall Street Journal and saying that they're insufficiently pro-corporate, or they're hurting their interests as board members, et cetera, et cetera. We'd all be outraged. But apparently, it's perfectly fine to do things like that at Pacifica Radio in terms of the expectations of people around programming. And that just goes by the wayside because it's a democracy and because we're listener subscribers. I don't think that that's true. I think this is a real compromise of the journalistic independence of programmers. It also results in things like this, which I would like to play for you, which is that on September 17th, the Pacifica National Governance Committee apparently passed some sign of a resolution. And Ian Boll, I should mention, wrote a very good article in Counterpunch, which I think outlines a lot of these concerns. Ian Boll and Counterpunch passed some kind of a resolution demanding that programmers disclose the money that they're getting from other organizations. And I'd like to play an excerpt from the board member who,
sure.
Who proposed this and why.
Really, the objective of this is to have Amy Goodman tell us where she's getting the money and what the money's buying.
I just want to, there's a YouTube moment which somebody
just as it was getting to something else I wanted to play, why did it stop like that? How annoying. Max, if you can hear my voice, why did this happen? Why did this happen? You know what we're going to do? We're going to go to a little bit more DJ Sabash while we try to figure this out. Oh, here we are back at the good part again. Here, we're back at the good part again.
If you want
to see. All right, so all of a sudden, it stopped and went back to the beginning. We were cute again. So just as we were getting to the good part where the conspiranoids were baiting Amy Goodman.
And what they had done to them. Very emotional, very insightful. Very hard to listen to. That's the kind of, and a story that was shamefully ignored by much of the rest of the media.
No, this is not it.
This
we
conference.
Went too far.
And that's the kind of conference, that's the kind of
should we cut the music?
That Pacifica Radio and KPFA can Let's still do, that we have an important role in providing a microphone for events like that. I think there still is a role for good, solid.
Jawani, jab tak khun mein rawani. the mix with DJ Sebash.
Okay, I think we're, okay, that was once again In the Mix with DJ Sebash. But now we're going to go back to Against the Grain, broadcast of October 20th on KPFA in Berkeley, if all goes well.
On the most immediate level, what this perspective is going to do is it's going to turn the local station boards into bazaars, essentially, for the trading of airtime. I'm very concerned that that's going to happen. And the possibility of these boards really being for anything else, especially helping the stations, will go down the drain. That's the most immediate problem. The other problem is that this really sort of compromises the journalistic independence of programmers at Pacifica Radio. If we heard that the board of Dow Jones, which publishes the Wall Street Journal, that board members were regularly denouncing reporters at the Wall Street Journal and saying that they're insufficiently pro-corporate, or they're hurting their interests as board members, et cetera, et cetera, we'd all be outraged. But apparently, it's perfectly fine to do things like that at Pacifica Radio in terms of the expectations of people around programming. And that just goes by the wayside because it's a democracy and because we're listener subscribers. I don't think that that's true. I think this is a real compromise of the journalistic independence of programmers. It also results in things like this, which I would like to play for you, which is that on September 17th, the Pacifica National Governance Committee apparently passed some sign of a resolution. And Ian Boll, I should mention, wrote a very good article in Counterpunch, which I think outlines a lot of these concerns. Ian Boll and Counterpunch passed some kind of a resolution demanding that programmers disclose the money that they're getting from other organizations. And I'd like to play an excerpt from the board member who, sure, who proposed this and why.
Really, the objective of this is to have Amy Goodman tell us where she's getting the money and what the money's buying. The reason that I created this motion is because there has been a lot of debate about whether or not Amy Goodman has received CIA Conduit Foundation funding from the Ford Foundation and other places known long time suspected of being conduits for CIA funding, and she is accused, or not accused, but the issue is raised that she has received Ford Foundation for 9/11 coverage. Now, I'd like to know if that's actually the case, and I think a lot of people associated with Pacifica would like to know, because we'd like to know what kind of 9/11 coverage the Ford Foundation paid for, and we'd like to know what we're getting for our money, and what kind of influences that money has created. And you know, the whole issue of Amy Goodman and 9/11 has been an ongoing one for years and years and years, one that she has consistently ducked. And I would like to create a set of conditions whereby she can't duck it anymore.
You know, this may seem, this idea of journalistic independence and the independence of programs might seem a little obscure to some people. I understand that. Imagine if you read in the newspaper tomorrow that the American Israel Political Action Committee held a press conference saying they're sick and tired of what they're hearing on KPFA about Israel. And in the next election, they're going to get 1,000 subscribers to subscribe, and they're going to run a slate in the next election to change KPFA's programming about Israel. I think that a lot of people who are listening to the sound of my voice would suddenly get what I'm trying to say a lot more easily.
But going back to the audio clip that you just aired,
yes.
What's wrong with having people disclose the source of their funding? Is that a problem for Pacifica?
My problem is not with the technical requirements here. The real objection here is their objection with Amy Goodman's politics. That's the issue here. They don't like Amy Goodman's politics, and they want and as board members, what they want to do is they want to step in and they want to change the politics of Pacifica's programming. That's the real issue here. I think that this board member is being honest here about that, or at least that's my perception of the intention here, and that's my big concern. My main concern, if I had to change these elections, one of the things that I would really want the bylaws to say very explicitly is that board members don't have anything to do with programming. They can't sit on station board program councils and make decisions about programming. They can't go to the general manager. They can't go to the program director and say, I want to change programming. They can't pass resolutions that are designed to affect programming. There's got to be a strict firewall between governance and programming, just like there supposedly is it supposed to be at every other media organization. That has to happen at Pacifica Radio. And I think that if people understood that if you get one of these local station board seats, you don't have this right to impact programming. I think that that it would discourage some of the people who are running for the board, and it might actually encourage other people who have more to contribute to the overall health of the organization.
I want to just jump in and say, I'm thinking about what you're saying, Matthew, and I'm not sure why. Well, I think that the bylaws provision to draw that firewall is a very good idea.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that that would actually discourage people who have that as their ultimate agenda. All they have to do is get rid of the manager, put in the kind of program director they want, and they can achieve their ends that way. So I'm not sure that that solves the problem.
Well, Eileen, I'd like to know from your standpoint as somebody who works in the radio station, to what degree do you think that people within the stations have felt pressure from the board around programming?
The news has always maintained a very clear stance that we will determine, and we have our own editorial guidelines, what is on the news, what is not on the news. We clearly get phone calls, we get emails, we listen to them. People point out either errors that we have committed, and if we have, we correct them, or errors they think we've committed.
All right. Once again, that was a little bit of a broadcast from October 20th on the program Against the Grain on KPFA, Pacifica Station in Berkeley, California. The name of that episode was After the Pacifica Crisis, featuring KPFA's Eileen Alfandari. She's, I think, program director out there, something like that. And Matthew Lazar, who is, of course, the author of Pacifica Radio, The Rise of an Alternative Network, and its sequel, Uneasy Listening, The Civil War at Pacifica. Well, you know what? I said I would take listener phone calls. So, I've been ranting now. There's a third straight week that I've been ranting about the really sinister direction at WBAI and at Pacifica generally. And, apparently I'm not alone. Now, once again, just by way of stating my own position, I don't agree with Matthew Lazar and, arguing that the democratic experiment at Pacifica has failed and should be reconsidered. I hope I don't agree with him. I don't think I agree with him, but I will say that, he makes a disturbingly valid case, and that the people here in New York who justify shouting down people that they disagree with when they've got the floor or they've got the mic at the board meetings, whether it's the local board or the national board, you know, are contributing to an atmosphere in which there is an anti-democratic backlash, which we already see, which is already underway. Okay? And, you know, shouting down your opponents is not, it's not democracy. It's utterly, utterly antithetical to democracy. So, I should also state that, you know, there is a, an election which is pending, even though the ballots, of course, that's the word, the ballots, even though the ballots have, seemingly are not going out with any degree of reliability. Hopefully they're all going to go out eventually in time for those of us, you know, who have not received them, including myself, to be able to vote. But nonetheless, there is an election pending, and I am restrained from endorsing or dissing any candidates. So if I'm going to take listener phone calls, once again, I'm going to call upon the listeners who call in to play by the rules and to respect the fact that we are, you know, legally restrained, constrained from discussing by name any of the candidates. Okay, so let's try to keep our eyes on the issues rather than the personalities. Okay. And I'm going to take phone calls for the remaining 25 minutes, but I'm going to be quite ruthless about cutting off anybody who does not abide by the ground rules. The number is 212-209-2900, 212-209-2900, and we plunge into the unknown. You're on the air.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I found it very interesting what you're saying, and I was curious. The gentleman, Matthew Lazar. Yeah, Matthew. I have found that in olden times they had a board that was an advisory board, but that was many years ago in New York. I don't know too much about California, especially in the years you're talking about, but the meetings I ever attended after a certain time, which I don't remember when it began, but the shouting seemed to be, I wouldn't even want to go into that now because I don't know exactly what that was due to. And some of the people were reacting without knowing what they were reacting about. They just got upset and felt that they weren't being heard.
Or no, when are you talking about? You're talking about
our meetings. When I went to the, not board meetings, I just went to the LSB meetings. And that's going all the way back when, things were not good.
When?
How far back? I would have to say well before the years Matthew is talking about.
All right. Well, I mean, okay, before the immediate aftermath of the WBAI crisis in, I believe it would have been, that would have been 2002. Before that, there was the LAB, the LAB, the Listener Advisory Board.
Well, that was better, didn't you think?
And subsequent to that, it became the LSB, the Listener, the Local Station Board. And the difference was that, you know, the LAB members were appointed, where people actually get the vote for the LSB, and they actually take more of a direct role in managing the station in terms of personnel and so on. Now, I thought at the time, and I believe I still do think, that it was a step in the right direction to democratize. But, you know, when democracy, historically, going, you know, all the way back, you know, from ancient Rome right on through, you know, the Weimar Republic and Allende's Chile, right? when democracy, you know, breaks down and doesn't function well and becomes a mess, then, you know, the military steps in and imposes a dictatorship.
Well, can I tell you that when I was in Greece in 2005, the people were quite upset that they had no democracy. And the young people I spoke to there, they were quite unhappy with their government. And I found very intelligent people there. And democracy is not something easily had. because what you have as an ideal and what you have in reality, I'm afraid it's kind of a utopian goal.
Yeah, well, you know what Ben Franklin said after they after they drew up, what was it, the Articles of Confederation? Or was it after, or was it when they actually drew up the Constitution? I can't remember which. But anyway, they asked him, what did you just make in there? And he said, a republic, if you can keep it.
Yes, that's the best I would hope for. And we've had a lot of trouble with our republics, as did the Romans.
Yes.
So I'm afraid that we're not really, people are pretty much more we have more foibles than we have ideal personalities. And I think people argue because they're coming from a totally different place than the other person, and you start feeling shouted down, and then someone else. It's so chaotic that you don't know who's saying what, when, where, or for what reason. And what does that lead to? Chaos.
Thank you. All right, we're going to move on to another call. Thank you very much. WBAI, you're on the air. You're on the air. Please speak up.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Why can't you learn the board?
WBAI, you're on the air. Please speak up. Turn down your radio and speak up.
Hello.
Please, yeah, turn down the radio and speak up.
Okay, I'm here.
Yeah.
It was interesting listening to the clip that they played of the guy who was attacking Amy Goodman. Now, this doesn't change the point that they were making about board members affecting or attacking programmers. But I think they were misunderstood where he was coming from. He wasn't attacking her for covering 9/11 issues. I think he was coming from a conspiracy theorist point of view.
Obviously.
That thought she was avoiding the 9/11 issues of the conspiracy theorist.
Yes, of course.
Which he is. Okay.
Wait, no. I'm the guy who was calling for the measure which would impose transparency on Amy's sources of funding. He was obviously a conspiranoist. He was a so-called truther who, you know, felt that, Amy is a gatekeeper, as they put it in their lingo. Right? You understand that?
Yeah. A gatekeeper of the truth. Yes. Yes. I remember she gave them air one time in a debate against the Popular Mechanics editors, and so they've considered her
a traitor, of course, because any
right.
journalist who doesn't buy their line and give endless airtime to their wackiness is a traitor, of course.
Right.
Yes.
Right. I've seen videos of her being ambushed at book signings by these people.
Yes.
Okay, that's all.
All right. Well, let's move on. Thank you for your call. Yeah, it was the Constitutional Convention of 1787, and as Ben Franklin was leaving, he was asked by a blogger, "Well, doctor, what have we got, a republic or a monarchy?" And he said, "A republic, if you can keep it." Well, here's the question. Are we going to be able to keep the republic here at WBAI and at the Pacifica Network, or are we going to, go back to the evil empire? WBAI, you're on the air.
You suck.
Thank you. Really inspires a great deal of faith in the intelligence and acumen of the listeners. WBAI, you're on the air. No, you're not. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hi, Max.
This is not Max.
It's not Max Weinberg?
No, it's Bill Weinberg.
Oh, Bill Weinberg.
Max Schmid was giving me...
I have a friend named Max.
Max Schmid was giving me technical assistance despite our political disagreements, which I thank him most heartily.
Yeah, two quick things. First of all, I went to Calexico at 88 Fifth Avenue in Brooklyn, and it was excellent.
Isn't it? I had lunch there today.
They now have many new customers. Second thing is my history at BAI goes.
And I'm not getting any payola from them, by the way.
No, but it really is a great
place. I pay for my beans there.
And it's only a couple of blocks from Atlantic Avenue.
Right.
Listen, my background at BAI goes all the way back to 30 East 39th Street and the Vera Institute of Justice, and I used to work with Marty Gersten and Fred Haber and Tom Whitmore, if any of those names mean anything to you. I mean, we're going back to like 1961, 1962. And I used to run on the board, and I used to work with Josephson and Post and Bob Fass. And, I listen to the station now, and I'm still a member. I have not received my ballot. And here's the complaint that I have. You and everybody else is not allowed to talk about the issues. Everybody talks about the issues.
Let me finish.
Go ahead. Like that lady said before, unfortunately, people like Mike Fader and Bill Farrar are gone. So there are a few folks like yourself and like David Rothenberg and like L. Paul Martin who kind of talk about the Simis and the Tsuris and the Sturm und Drang. But I have no idea what the issues are.
Are you accusing me of obfuscation?
No. I understand that you're not allowed to talk about anything in specific.
That's not true. I think I've been speaking extremely specifically.
But without tagging the particular entities as to who stands for what.
I need to respond here. You're making an accusation. I need to respond here. Right. And hang on a minute. May I respond, please?
Of course.
All right. I need to make very, very clear what I can say and what I can't say and when I can say it and when I can't say it. Okay. What at the moment there is an election pending. I am not allowed to either endorse or diss any of the candidates. And therefore, I don't. Okay. When the election is over, then I can do so. Then I can weigh in, I suppose, on the results. But while the election is pending, I'm not allowed to either endorse or diss any of the candidates. I am also constrained by general policy here at BAI from calling out any other producers by name, okay? But this, you know, to me, the personalities are not all that relevant. What's relevant are the issues. And if you're talking about the two general camps here at BAI, and I understand this is an oversimplification, but it's a somewhat useful oversimplification, you know, it's largely a turf war. It really has very, very little to do with any substantive political issues. It's largely a turf war. To oversimplify somewhat, okay, and I acknowledge this is an oversimplification, you know, you've got the more artsy bohemian types in one camp and the more, you know, hardcore Marxist-Leninist types, you know, and then third world nationalist types in the other camp. But even that is a real, real oversimplification. And I honestly think that it has got much, much, much more to do with mere turf and ego than with ideology.
So you're saying there are no good guys and bad guys?
I think that there are, I've made this point over and over again. There are people who I think have really got the best interests of the station at heart on both sides. But I also take issue with just about everybody who is identified with a particular camp for failing to take sufficient responsibility, at least, for the ugliness exhibited by their own side.
You know, Bill, all I can say is somebody who used to run the board for Pepsi Charles and for Lynn Samuels for 10, 15 years when Marty Gersten was there, I don't have a clue who I should vote for, because I don't know substantively.
Well, I'm not allowed to tell you.
I know. And neither is anybody else. It's kind of like 1984. We've always been at war with Oceania. All of a sudden, we're at war with somebody else. And as an outsider, all you hear is the Sturm und Drang, and there's nothing substantive. And you know what? I'll tell you another thing which really bugs me. You turn on the radio, there's this middle-aged guy with some kind of strange accent, and all they talk about is fresh vegetables and prostate cancer.
Well, I don't think that, you know, dissing somebody's accent is very much to the point.
My point is that all they talk about is, like, fresh vegetables, and I wish they would talk about something substantive. And by the way, I wish Gary Null could come back. All right, thanks. Wait a minute.
Hang on a minute here. You're like complaining about people talking about fresh vegetables, and you wish Gary Null could come back. I'm not quite following your logic there, but I certainly agree that the Sturm und Drang gives me Weltschmerz. WBAI, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello. Hi.
Hi. You're on the air.
Oh, good. Well, what I wanted to ask about, I don't remember hearing. You said that people were talking about the Admiral.
Yes, Admiralty Law. Mm-hmm.
And who? Which group was that? Because
it was one of the many snake oil premiums which were being offered during the ongoing fund drive.
But I don't remember that one. What was the title of it?
I don't remember the title of it, but I heard it. I wish I hadn't, but I heard it.
Okay, because I heard all the health things.
I'll do an internet search and see if I can find the title. But
okay.
I heard it. I wish that I hadn't, because it was pretty appalling.
Okay, and you don't remember who was pushing it?
Well, even if I did, I would be constrained from mentioning his or her name.
Okay, I got you.
But I will look on the internet and see if I can find the title of that video.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
WBAI, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, Bill.
Hi.
I haven't heard you on the air for a long time.
Well, I've been on every Tuesday night for, it seems like, forever. Anyway.
No, I have, like, the last, what is it, last month, I've been listening to the radio to see if you come on, and nothing.
No, I've been on every Tuesday night for the past month.
Are you serious?
Absolutely, yeah. Every Tuesday at midnight, yeah. Anyway, what can we do for you?
Well, the audio clip that you were playing before.
Yep.
Where that guy was in a, I guess he was being interviewed and sort of like debating with someone else. I don't recall what their names were.
It was Matthew Lazar speaking with the producers of the show Against the Grain on KPFA in Berkeley.
All right. Yep. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
He also played a clip of a guy sort of attacking Amy Goodman.
That's right. Yes.
Some of the
certainly.
Now look, with the whole conspiracy theories and stuff like that, I don't really think much of that stuff. But I think that there is a form for that where you could have a debate. But that kind of attack that he did on Amy Goodman, I feel like whoever this guy is, he works for WBAI, if he's lying, he should be fired for some of the things that he said. That's very irresponsible. Trying to connect her with the
CIA, yeah.
Which then goes down to she's, in other words, just slandering her character by saying, she's trying to destroy the show, sort of.
Well, look, you know, I believe in freedom of speech. And,
no, I do believe in freedom of speech. I agree. I agree with you on that, and you should. But I don't know. I see it as that's an attack on someone's character. That's like calling, I work at a place and somebody says that guy's a rapist. You know, I feel that he's a rapist, and he has no proof of that, let's just say. He works with me.
Well, you know,
I mean, should this guy be allowed
to
be?
They used to call it back in the 60s, they used to call it snitch baiting, where you would, make accusations that somebody was a police infiltrator, mm-hmm. and thereby stigmatize that person. And, of course, the real police infiltrators would use this tactic all the time and accuse other people of it. And that was what the COINTELPRO program was all about. And thereby, create all of these internecine splits and factionalism in the targeted organizations, most notably the Black Panthers. So, but unfortunately, I don't even think that the FBI is to blame here. I don't think that, the guys who are calling Amy Goodman a CIA agent actually do work for the CIA. But
yeah, they probably are the CIA.
And in fact, if I were to make that accusation, I would be engaging in exactly the kind of behavior which I'm criticizing. So
right, that's what I'm saying. It's irresponsible behavior. I think that when you look, there are certain things that I believe in. Okay, when it comes to certain events that have happened in our country, but I think to make irresponsible comments like that, especially when you're in the position that this guy that made the comment is in, I think that they should seriously look at this person, investigate the issue, and if he's just making up stuff like that, that can obviously hurt Amy Goodman and her position at WBAI,
yeah,
he should be fired. That's just my opinion. I think he should be let go because that's very irresponsible.
Well, look, that I'm also extremely critical of, this whole paranoid mindset.
Right.
On the other hand, I'm not sure. That said, I'm not sure that I necessarily even oppose his proposal. I mean, maybe there should be transparency in terms of, where funding comes from. But, yes, the whole snitch baiting thing is quite ugly. I certainly agree with you.
Yeah. That's all I had to say.
I'm going to see if we can squeeze in another call or two. Thank you very much.
You too.
And I believe that the name of the DVD was Admiralty Law versus Civil/Criminal Law. I believe that's what the internet search I just did, very brief and cursory internet search I just did, seems to indicate. All right, we've got around 5 minutes left. See if we can squeeze in one or two more calls. WBAI, you're on the air.
Well, in this ongoing pledge drive, I heard an amazing premium being promoted. Dr. Thomas Clark, I believe, was the speaker, an octogenarian, who was going on and on about how the white people can't possibly be socialist because they can't share, because they lived in the land of ice and snow where they had deprivation and they didn't, and so they can't be generous. And that's why white people have to be, you know, killed the way they, white people want to kill all the black people.
Killed?
This is an actual
killed?
Premium.
I'm a little bit skeptical that that's actually what you heard. But,
No, that's what it was.
Yeah, killed? I'm a little bit skeptical.
Dr. Thomas Clark, I think,
I think you probably mean Henrik Clark, perhaps.
I'm not sure what his name was. It was a Clark name.
Yes.
But he did imply, he certainly did imply that white people can't be socialist.
Okay, well, that's right. Implying that white people can't be socialist is not the same thing as saying white people should be killed. So let's, you know, try to avoid any slippery slopes here, okay?
Well, okay, how he said it was the white people are maniacally dedicated to killing all black people, so there is no way to negotiate with them reasonably. You know, that sort of implies that you have to kill them back. So, you know, this is the kind of, this was being promoted by a host that was put in place by...
Well, no. Now we're getting at the personalities, which I wish to avoid. WBAI, you're on the air. WBAI, you're on the air. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hey, Bill. Hi. I'm an online listener from the Portland, Oregon area.
Oh, hello.
And I really appreciate the conversation you're hosting tonight because, as a previous caller said, it's pretty rare on a Pacifica radio station, and it's also been very useful to have you clarify what you can say and what you can't. So thanks for that.
Yep.
But I think what you've raised and what a number of the callers are grappling with is something that Pacifica just never really talks about or opens up a forum for the listeners to talk about, which is, you know, the parts of the Lou Hill mission that put into action, you know, this inevitable contradiction. On the one hand, Lou Hill wasn't coming from a necessarily left-wing perspective, although he was, you know, anti-war. The mission for Pacifica was supposed to be to give a voice to the voiceless, so that if the left was ascendant, that would mean having the right on to be able to speak to the left and to create dialogues on the air where they don't exist in the mainstream or even public media.
Yep.
And that mission is often lost in the partisanship of people's ideologies, and then too, the structure of there being no time limits for programmer shows, no term limits, it means that fiefdoms, cantons are created in which programmers protect their own airspace.
Well, given that, you know, I've been on the air since 1992, if memory serves, and I inherited this slot from Peter Lamborn Wilson, who had been on the air since 1988, who in turn inherited it from James Irsay, who had been on the air since at least the 1970s. I'm just protecting my turf here, but I'm not sure how open I am to this critique.
But the issue that comes up repeatedly is, should programs be put to different criteria for testing whether they should continue or be replaced? Because if you don't replace them, what you've just described is a padrone system. So really, the issue that I've grappled with through the years is, should you open it up to the public as a voting thing, or is it an issue of who raises the most money for Pacifica? These are both models I've wrestled with but thrown away for reasons, you know, that are probably pretty obvious because you jump all over them. There are just so many things to attack about both those criteria.
Yep. No easy answer.
No easy answer.
Yeah.
But it needs talking about. The other thing that needs talking about is I think you're, however, a little short with the conspiracy theorists. Not because I have any great sympathy for their views.
Mm-hmm.
But again, because if you're going to have a station that follows Lou Hill's mission, you're going to have people with loopy ideas, and they're going to be at decision-making positions. Otherwise, you're not being true to the ideas, the ideals of, giving a voice to the voiceless.
Mitch, hang on a minute. These people aren't voiceless. These people are hegemonic. Okay, the people who actually have a irrational and distanced view of what happened on 9/11, like me, we're the voiceless ones. We're the ones who are being excluded from the debate.
Here's what I flash back to, Bill. I flash back to my experience at KPFA in Berkeley in the 80s when someone who was dismissed as a conspiracy theorist, this was before she went on to join academia and write books about the Christian right, Sarah Diamond, when she was talking about not a conspiracy because she didn't like using that word, but she did source Mae Brussels, so right away she was dismissed as a conspiracy theorist, but looking at the networks of Christian right fundraising and
We have to be off the air, so wrap it up in 25 words or less.
If there could be an open forum like there was with Sarah Diamond in the 80s, where on a Saturday night somebody gives up their show and you have a panel discussion fairly moderated between the conspiracists and other people.
I've tried to do exactly that over these airwaves. On the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade.
I applaud you.
Yeah, okay, so I've tried to do exactly that. Thank you very much. But I also have to say that I'm kind of finished doing it because the conspiracy theorists don't argue honestly. So I'm kind of finished arguing with them. It's kind of a sucker's game. Anyway, unfortunately, we're out of time. Maybe we'll continue this conversation at a later date. Meanwhile, do stay tuned for Weaponry with Tom Whisker coming up next on... listener-supported, non-commercial, if you can keep it, WBAI 99.5 FM here in New York City. Let's go have a little bit more of DJ Sabash. See you next week, and ohala, salam aleikum.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.